Guys tredje podcast. Vi har tidligere hatt med oss Mike Portnoy og Charlie Domenici I tidligere sendinger. I dag så har vi et langt intervju med Jordan Rudess, hvor Jordan røper en del hemmeligheter og nyheter, ikke minst om den nye skiva og den nye turnéen, men også om andre ting, så heng med. On the phone, Skype phone from the US, I've got with me today Jordan Rudess. Welcome, Jordan.
Thank you. Hello to you. Hello to everybody.
Where are you now? Are you back home in New York? Or?
Yep, I'm sitting in my house in New York and just getting ready after the interview. I'll go into my studio and I'm programming. You know, I have to do a lot of pre-production for our upcoming world tour, so I'm kind of in the depths of that already.
All right, cool. Congratulations on the new album, Black Clouds and Silver Linings, June 23rd. We're all very, very excited about the new album. You recently wrapped up the album in the studio. Can you tell us a little about the writing process and the recording process in the studio?
Well, sure. It's we've got a pretty cool formula going these days. We recorded again at Avatar, which is in New York City, which is the studio that we're used to. And we used Paul Northfield, who was the engineer. He also mixed the album. So we had familiar hands at the helm. And I think that this time around, in my opinion, this album sounds better than any that we've done so far, probably because we were smart enough to go with someone who we knew would do a good job, and he was kind of used to working with us and comfortable working with us, so he took the time to really he just went the extra mile and made it even better than ever. So that part was really good, and we were in comfortable surroundings. And as usual, you know, we all work very hard on the process. We all set up in the big room there and with all our gear. And we started to hash out the songs, and the writing process goes pretty quickly. We just throw a lot of ideas out there, and things kind of happen before you can even blink your eyes. And then we start doing all the writing does, and then we start doing all the tracking and getting all that together. And that part actually takes longer than the actual like writing of the tunes. Writing, we could write a song in a day or two or maybe three if it's a really long one. Yeah. And then once that's done, then we start, we lay down the drums, and then we put down the guitar and the bass and keys, and then the voice happens, and it all kind of comes together after the foundation of the song is written. So we had a good time. It was John Petrucci, Mike, and myself writing the music, and then John and Mike go off and pretty much write all the melodies and stuff like that. And then next thing we've got an album.
Oh, that's cool. About the writing process, I must say you make it sound so easy. There are bands that just stay in the studio for like months and years to bring out a new album, and you guys make it sound so easy. Is the creativity really flowing that easy for you guys? And yeah, is it really as easy as it sounds?
It's funny, yeah. Like I wouldn't. It's in a way I would say it's easy, but it's easy in the sense that there's enough ideas floating around just between. As far as just throwing out notes between John Petrucci and myself, we have enough notes to go around. So, I mean, it's more a question of, which parts we kind of like, accept into what we're doing. Like, I'm an improviser. I'll sit down at the piano and I'll play all day, and without playing any particular song, I'll just go, just play something. Yeah. And if I'm really inspired, well, then maybe, it'll be really good. But, on a bad day, I can still do something. So I'm throwing stuff out and John Petrucci kind of does the same thing. So, I mean, sometimes we'll just sit there and we'll be stumped in the sense that the things that we're throwing out might not feel right or whatever. And we'll just kind of keep doing it until, it feels a little bit more within the mode that we need it to be. Other times the process can slow down. A lot of times we'll write a part that's like very harmony based, in the sense that we're looking for a particular mood, like with certain chords. Like there's a song called A Night to Remember on the new album. I'm sorry, the Nightmare song.
Yeah.
And we were looking for, I'm still getting used to the titles because in my mind they're still the ones that you know, we have working titles that the ones I get used to. That one was called Halloween.
All right.
So, yeah. So in Halloween, we were looking for particular chords that had a certain sound to them. And we'll play, you know, we'll try a few, and then we'll go, you know what, no, the third chord could be a little better, and we'll sit there, and, like, usually a lot of that ends up on the chord job ends up on me a lot of times, and I'll say, well, you could go to this chord, or you could go to this one. You know, it's like a lesson in harmony. Well, this, you know, from this key, you know, from on an E flat minor, you could go here, you know. So, and I'll throw them out, and then we'll kind of form things that way. That takes a little longer than more of the stream of consciousness kind of writing that we also can do.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it all happens in different ways. I like to tell the story of how we wrote the middle section for Dark Eternal Night, which was, we were kind of following this path, this very guitar-influenced part that John was kind of going nuts with one morning. And we're in there, and we recorded the whole first section, which is pretty much the song as you know it. But then we got to a certain point, and we went to inside the control room to listen to, and it was cool, it was all good. But while we were in there, I was thinking, you know what, we should take this out and get really, you know, like progressive kind of dream theater with it.
Yeah.
And I just thought of an idea, and it was just this weird, you know, dun 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 dun. I just had this weird riff in my mind. And I was debating, because, you know, sometimes my ideas can be maybe a little left of what might be considered a dream theater acceptable idea. And, you know, sometimes they're the ones that everybody thinks are cool. And,
yeah,
you know, that. So it's hard for me to totally know at the moment whether it's going to be one of the ones that they say, oh, that's too Dregs-like, or that's too this, or that's too that, or whether it's going to be one that somebody says, yeah, I love that. So anyway, so I was debating whether or not I should even bring it up. But then I said, you know, I got brave, and I said, you know what, I got this weird idea. We want to, you know, let's give it a listen. So I tried it, and then, you know, John Petrucci, sometimes with that kind of thing, he'll give me a weird look, like, what the hell are you doing? And Mike will say, oh, that's cool, let's try it. And, you know, usually it happens like that, where Michael start be kind of into it, because he likes quirkier music, or more progressive stuff like I do.
Yeah.
And then John always ends up liking it. But it's not necessarily his first feeling, because it strikes him as a little bit different. But anyway, so we followed that path, and it ended up being a really cool thing. And then, you know, he gets into it, and he starts to contribute as well. And next thing you know, we have one of these cool, you know, progressive sections. So, and things like that happen all the time. There's one funny story from this album where, what song is it? I think it's in the Count of Tuscany, mm-hmm, where it breaks off into this really, really kind of, I think it's really cool, progressive section. It's like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's this whole thing where everybody's kind of playing in unison these quick 16th notes, and it just builds through these different chords. And I wrote it. I wrote the part at home one day at my little Kurzweil digital piano. And I just recorded it onto my iPhone, and I brought it in. And actually, I had about three or four ideas, and they all ended up in that piece that were all very connected in my mind. So we started. I showed it to the guys. The guys, you know, gave it a chance, and they liked it, and they thought it was cool. And we started to put it together. Then John Petrucci wrote this other part. My part was all around like C minor, and his part was around like E and G sharp minor, and those keys, I don't know, it's I guess somewhat, I don't know, they don't naturally, you know, like fit like a glove, but you can certainly make anything work, or I guess we can. But anyway, so we wrote this whole thing, and it was happened to be the day that James visited us, that we started to put it together, and James heard this one part, and he said, oh man, he says, you can't, he says, no man, he says, that part just says, does not flow. It's not working. But we sounded like a high school band, or like one of the bad Dream Theater imitation bands. But, you know, we knew that the idea was there. And, you know, Mike, John, and I knew that something was, you know, going to be cool. You had to maybe use a little bit of imagination to do it. Anyway, James was there, which he really wasn't there much of the time for the sessions, but he was there then. And he said, you know, I don't know, you know, this part, just doesn't feel, it just, you know, it just ruins the flow of it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this is dream theater. We're like famous for making like sudden left turns musically. You know, like there are no bridges. You know, we just kind of, we do this thing and we make these cool sections and the tempo changes and that's what people love. But anyway, in my mind, actually, that was not some, you know, from a musical theory place. I thought that the parts connected in a cool way. So anyway, so he really didn't want the, he can have a, you know, big, strong say, or, but he didn't want it to be like that. But anyway, the just to get to the point. So, you know, we went on our way. We did it. We just kept going with it because more of us, I guess, liked it than not. And ended up, and when I listened to that part, I'm like, man, that's my favorite part of the whole, the whole album. It's just funny the way, you know, because people think, even though we're in the same band, we reach a common ground. Yeah. People, you know, part of what makes it cool is that, you know, there is a weeding process where we'll, and I, you know, somebody will have something and somebody else will say, well, that doesn't fit into this, and we'll listen to it, and you know, sometimes not, you know, but all in all, it makes the whole, you know. So this is some of the dynamics and some of the process that, you know, that we go through.
That's cool. There are some epic sounding titles on this album. I mean, A Nightmare to Remember, A Rite of Passage, The Shattered Fortress. They are all good movie titles, even.
Thanks for reminding me of the titles, though. I appreciate that.
What can we expect, like lyrically, compared to Systematic Chaos and Octavarium? You said in the start there that sound-wise, you think that this is the maybe better sounding album than that you've done.
What about lyrics?
Yeah, lyrically, is it kind of along the same path, or?
Well, I try not to listen to the lyrics too much, but like in general, not because of any reason. I mean, I'm just speaking very generally. I'm not a lyrics-oriented person. However, because this is my group, and I care, you know, and I'm interested in what like John Petrucci is doing lyrically, and I take an interest.
Yeah.
You know, I'll read his lyrics, and he wrote some great lyrics for this. He really. You know, I think John has really gotten to a really fine spot in his craft of writing lyrics. And, of course, Mike wrote, I think, one of the songs lyrically. He wrote it, too. And and they both did a really good job. They're very talented guys, obviously. But I think that John, you know, went on a slightly different path this time with his lyrics, where he didn't do – I think the last album was more kind of a – fiction type of thing, you know, the whole Dark Master deal.
Yeah.
But in this album, it's, you know, he's telling some stories and some stories that, you know, either really happened to him or just kind of extending on some things that started out grounded in a realistic situation. And also, I think dealing with, as usual, dealing with some pretty heavy subjects, like his lyrics to Rite of Passage are about the Freemasons, and you know, it's like religious, spiritual kind of thing, and he's, you know, talking. He's not afraid to kind of get in there and write a song about that. It was like when he wrote the words to The Great Debate. Hmm. You know, it's not. I don't think people are coming to Dream Theater to listen to love songs. That's generally. So there's some heavy stuff, and Mike, of course, with his, you know, The Shattered Fortress is continuing along his series of tunes, and wrote you know, some very, very intense lyrics for that, and The Best of Times is about his dad, and you know, who they were incredibly close, and it was a really very difficult thing in his life that he had to go through, and he managed to capture it in the spirit of that song, and you know, write lyrics that are pretty, pretty deep.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to I think the set of lyrics that are along with this album.
Yeah. And to get back to the sound of the album, you said that Paul Northfield has once again used his magic touch and improved the sound even more. How could you describe that a bit more? How has he improved the sound on this one compared to the other ones? Is it more, down to the instruments, or is it more a new kind of sound?
You're just asking in general how.
Yeah, just in general,
sounds? Well, I will say that I think in the sound of the instruments, I think all the instruments sound even better than they ever have. Like the drums sound really, really good, and the guitar is just really dialed in as well as it could be, and keyboards sound great, and the bass sounds better than I think it ever has in a Dream Theater album, and the vocals sound awesome. I mean, I know it sounds kind of funny with me like singing my kind of like my own praises here. Mm-hmm. However, but I think it's just real, you know, it's just the time was spent and the lessons have been learned from previous albums that I think are really the benefit of those lessons are apparent in every aspect of this album. Mm. I just think, you know, even down to the mastering of the album, where I think the mastering was much more effective and the dynamics are still like left in the music in a big way, more so than a lot of albums these days. And that's just, you know, that whole loudness war, which I'm sure you've heard about, and a lot of our listeners have heard about. That's a serious thing, you know, where people are trying to make it so when they put on their music, it's just, you know, it's just as loud or louder than other, you know, than other music that is on the radio or on your CD player. But, you know, at this time around, we said, you know what, we're not going to play that game. That's ridiculous. And we just, you know, we left the dynamics really in the music, and I think it makes a big difference to the listening experience.
That's cool. Well, I can't wait to hear it. And it's a shame it's another 2.5 months before we can.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part as well is that there's also going to be a special edition set of this album, a 3-disc set with an extra disc with the instrumental mixes, and then a third disc with 6 cover songs. Now, why the instrumental mixes and... why the 6 cover songs?
Well, you know, things have changed a lot in the music industry, and I think that it's really important to offer something like the instrumental mixes, because people more and more, you know, like to be able to have access to individual files or individual parts, and, you know, like do their own mixes and play around with it. We've seen a lot of that, you know, from like Nine Inch Nails and a lot of groups just saying, okay, you know what, here are the stems, just play with it as you wish. So I think with Dream Theater, of course, a lot of people are just really all about the instrumental stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, as wonderful a singer as James is, there is definitely a lot of people out there who would like to hear the music, you know, without any kind of vocals. So, as a matter of fact, our instrumental versions don't have any leads either.
All right.
No, I don't remember about the effects. I don't think they have effects either. But at any rate, we just thought it was kind of a cool offering, something that's very timely, something that would make, you know, a lot of fans really happy. And that's what we decided to do. And then the covers, I mean, that was something that Mike thought about, and just how he came in with the idea to do that. And I just think, and you know, they all turned out really well. I think it's a fun idea. It's always interesting to hear, you know, to see how a Dream Theater cover will turn out.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what makes it up.
Oh, that's cool. I see the titles of the cover songs will be revealed at a later date, so we're all excited to see and hear what the songs will be.
Cool.
Now, I see that you're also going to do a video for the first single, A Rite of Passage. Is this something that the label approached you to do, or was it an idea from the band?
Well, I think we kind of all went into it knowing that we would do a video. It's just kind of par for the course. So, and we already went in and filmed it, actually.
Oh, cool.
A week and a half ago, we just went in and we went to Brooklyn, New York, where they had we went to a place that looked like they were driving us to do a hit. We were in some weird movie or something, and we got let off in this kind of desolate factory like neighborhood or industrial neighborhood, and we walked into this place, just walked through a door, and next thing you're in this building that's kind of got these big concrete walls, and in the back, you know, it's got a little makeup room and obviously used for different kinds of shoots and stuff like that. And you got this whole crew in there that had driven up from, where did they say they were from, like Charlotte, North Carolina, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. So they all, so we spent a day of it. It's always a lot of sitting around waiting and,
yeah,
you know, and hanging out. It was like cold in the room, and except for when we started to play the song over and over again. Making videos is a very funny thing. I hadn't done it. You know, the first one that I did was, personally, was the Constant Motion video. It was, the video thing was new, totally new for me. Mm. But it's not, because I wasn't with the guys in the old days. You know, I've been in the band for, what, 10 years now? Yep. So, it's a new experience. So,
cool.
Anyway, so we did that, and we had some fun, and hopefully it'll turn out well. We'll all see. Yeah. I think it'll be done around the end of April or so.
All
and
right.
I know that they'll probably put it out soon after that.
Okay, that's cool. So that will be out before the album itself, obviously.
Yeah. What's funny, of course, with these video things, is most of our songs, as you know very well, are longer than the you know, typical video. So we had to chop a rite of passage up pretty severely to get it to fit into the you know, the proper form. And it's just, I mean, it works well. If you don't know the other version, it's, you know, then you listen to this one, you think, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But if you know the other version, it's like really kind of like, whoa. You know, and like, I had to, even though, you know, in videos you're just kind of just playing along with it.
Yeah.
You have to really be like playing. So to learn it, you know, after recording the other version and then having to learn this this, you know, edited version is kind of a funny process.
And who gets to decide what kind of parts gets
snipped out?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I wasn't there for that. I'm sure Mike does it. I don't know if John was involved in that as well.
Yeah.
Probably.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I can't wait to see it. And it's cool that you're putting out a video again. It was really nice that we had a Constant Motion video the last time, so it'll be nice to see this one as well.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be cool.
Cool. Recently, you went to the NAMM 2009 Expo as well. What was that like? Did you meet any interesting people, or did you see any nice new gear that you might add to your setup?
Yeah, I went there. I hadn't been there for a long time. The NAMM show is a big, you know, exposition where they're showing all kinds of new musical gear, all different shapes and sizes. And I had fun there. I had been going there for many years when I used to be involved with Korg and Kurzweil as an employee.
Yeah.
So, and then I missed some years because, you know, touring with Dream Theater and everything. But it was fun to go back, and I kind of like booked myself a solid schedule. I was working, doing some stuff for a company called Spectrasonics.
That's right.
Showing an amazing program called Omnisphere, which is a program that I used a lot on the album. It's really incredible synthesizer. And I also worked for Korg, doing some stuff on the Oasis and the M3. And, of course, I have a very good relationship with Roland, and I did some things for them on a really interesting product called the VP770, which is this it's the next generation of this cool vocal keyboard. You can do like choir sounds on it. So if you play the keyboard and you use a mic and sing into it, you can sound like a full choir, or all these, like a boys choir, a gospel choir, a classical choir. You can do traditional vocoding on it. I actually went to out to California and stopped at Roland before the NAMM show, and we did some videos on that product. And actually, there's some video of me on the net showing the earlier product. It's called a VP550, which is also a really, really cool machine. But this thing, the VP770, is even more crazy and wild and cool. So that should be, you know, hitting the airwaves pretty soon. So there's a lot of good stuff. I discovered a really interesting orchestral synthesizer while I was there. I had heard about it for a while. It's called Sinful, S-Y-N-F-U-L. And it's not like some of these big libraries that I use as well, like where you have tons of samples and it's very intensive on just, you know, your memory and stuff, and disk drive space. This is something that's based on what he calls RPM, real phrase modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also additive synthesis. So anyway, so I discovered that while I was there, I had time to sit down and listen to his, and listen to his demo. And I ended up getting that when I got home, and you know, kind of getting very inspired by that as well. So yeah, I'm always discovering, you know, new toys. New ways to make sound. I don't know if you've seen any of my my iPhone stuff.
I was just getting to that. Yeah, I saw on your website that you're taking the iPhone to a whole new level. I mean, is there anything you can't make music out of? it's really amazing what such a little gadget like the iPhone can do, especially with your talents. And how do you come across all these programs? And
I don't know. I've been really into my iPhone since the beginning, and I kind of realized that it does things that that a lot of other platforms just can't do. I don't think a lot of people realize that right now on the iPhone, you have some capabilities technically that are just not available anywhere else. Things like like this whole thing about being able to blow into the microphone of the iPhone and play, you know, these physically modeled instruments. Like one of the YouTube things that I'm showing is a product called Wivi Band, W-I-V-I Band, mm-hmm. and it's made by Wallander Instruments. And the instruments were originally pro instruments that, you know, you can go to wallanderinstruments.com and you could download professional instruments. If somebody wants to get a wind library in their studio. But this guy, Arnie Wallander, who's become a friend of mine, is really, really very intelligent and managed to optimize his instrument collection and squeeze them into the iPhone, and they actually sound really amazing. The YouTube video I did is of a woodwind quartet that I wrote, and I played all the instruments. And I did like a split screen kind of thing. It's really, you know, when you think about it, it's just incredible what's going on there, you know, being able to get that kind of expression and play woodwind. He's got 15 different woodwind instruments on his in his iPhone application. It's nutty. It's really nutty. It's just something that, you know, when people realize that if you have an iPhone and, you know, at this point, chances are you might not know about it, but when you realize that that's what you can do with it, you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah. So there's that kind of thing. And also another one that I've been very involved with and even had some input into some of the design, some of the way that it works, is this program called Bebot, B-E-B-O-T. Yeah. That's one that really shows, like, in another way, the power of the iPhone, in that it's a multi-touch program where you can have four completely independent different oscillators going, and you've got your left right motion, and also you have your front back motion. So like if I'm controlling the timbre of my sound by pushing my finger front and back, I can have four completely different timbres, notes and timbres happening at the same time, and then slide them all around. And on the YouTube clip I did for that, I did kind of like a lap steel type of thing, or pedal steel, where I'm playing chords and notes of the chord are just kind of bending into other notes. It's a little bit continuum-like, actually. When I first saw this program, I was like, oh my God, it's like the iPhone continuum. So I worked with, the fellow's name is Russell Black, I worked with Russell towards the goal of refining the tuning system a little bit to make it even more possible to play like some real musical, phrases on it and things, so it would be a little bit easier to play it in tune. So we've got this kind of really advanced auto-tuning system now, where it can either, just the short version of what it'll do is it'll either snap to the grid, it'll automatically adjust your tuning if you're sliding around, which is so cool. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I've got a fellow who's making me my own custom Mellotron program for the iPhone now, so I'll be able to play some really huge and characteristic Mellotron sounds right from my iPhone.
It's really cool. Now, you mentioned there is a video out on YouTube that that people can watch. If they just type in Rudess meets Bebot, they'll get
If you just type in, you know, Bebot, Rudess, that's all, or Wivi Band, Rudess, you can find it immediately.
Cool.
said the straight man to the late man, where have you been? I've been here and I've been there and I've been in between. I talk carried away, I talk to the wind, the wind does not hear, the wind cannot hear. I'm on the outside looking inside. What do I see? Much confusion, disillusion all around me. I talk to the wind. My words are all carried away. I talk to the wind. The wind does not hear. The wind cannot
I think it's really, really inspiring for young musicians today to see that the technology is easily accessible and so easy to use for everyone. Now, when you, in your early days, when you were starting to play, were you inspired by the technology that your kind of heroes used back then?
Yeah.
Did that inspire you and to be as good as you could on the instruments that you played? And were the instrument as easily accessible back then as they are now?
Actually, the instrument that really changed my life was, and I've spoken about this before, because it really had a big impact on me, was the Mini Moog.
Yep.
And the Mini Moog was the real pivot point for me. It was the thing that came into my awareness that really changed my life. Actually, to be specific, it was an instrument called the Moog Sonic 5 that some high school friends of mine literally carried to my front door and brought into my house and had me play that like had me kind of blinking and thinking, okay, well, there's something going on here. There's something, a world to discover. But when I started to discover, like Rick Wakeman and Patrick Mraz and Keith Emerson and the heroes that really helped to guide me towards what I do these days, that's when I started to really want to get, some of these instruments. And I remember posting like magazine cutout pictures of Mini Moogs. Like I had literally all over my wall, I had pictures of Mini Moogs and like it was just, getting silly, like a whole collage. And because I really wanted one, but I didn't have one and I needed to figure out how to get one. Mm-hmm. And one day my father told me that he wanted me to go visit my uncle. My uncle had worked out buying me some kind of a Mini Moog. So that was the beginning. My first real keyboard system was a Mini Moog, an ARP string ensemble, and a Moog Taurus bass. Those are the three things that I would play.
Cool. Would you ever use those instruments now when you're practicing or when you're at home? Do you still have those instruments around? Or
I do have a Mini Moog. It's not the same one I had at the beginning, but it's a different one. But it's the same fit. It's the same exact kind of instrument. And actually, on this last album, I played a bunch of Mini Moog. I brought my Voyager in, which is like a modern day Mini Moog. The difference is it has presets and things like that, but it's basically the same kind of sound and control.
Yeah.
So I'm still, the Mini Moog had a big impact in my life. And a lot of times when I do like these space jams, sometimes I'll do electronic jams, especially with my neighbor and friend Richard Lainhart. We'll go out and we'll just do some really wild stuff with synthesizers. And I always have, my Mini Moog or my Voyager. Last one we did, I tried to have my Mini Moog, but it was not happy that day. It was just, it's old. So,
yeah.
Yes, a little bit more troublesome than I wanted it to be. So, so the technology has always kind of been my friend, and I'm just so inspired by all the developments and different ways to make music, and
cool.
it's been a really interesting time. I think people also know that I'm into it and know that I can wrap my head around these things, and so they seek me out, with their technology, and a lot of times I get turned on to some cool stuff.
Yeah,
which is great.
It's cool. Another musician, Jean-Michel Jarre, I'm sure you've heard of him. He recently did a tour just using all his old analog instruments to recreate the old Oxygen album. Were you ever into his kind of music?
Kind of, not so much. I respect what he does. I think he's a good synthesist and made a nice kind of, his music's fine. What I don't like about that kind of music, and maybe it comes from my being a classically trained musician, is that I always, and also being someone who's really into synthesizers and my mind is somewhere between Chopin and Morton Subotnick, I guess, and maybe like Gentle Giant. So the problem with that and listening to Michael Jean Jarre is that his note choices are, they're very, very basic.
Yeah.
And when I listen to the riffs, I can't help but think about somebody who's not really an advanced player or doesn't have a lot of music theory background or something. I don't know. It just seems too it's too simple to me. It's too simplified. Those kind of like, I used to call them like little notey note sequences.
Yeah.
So it makes me a little uncomfortable to listen to in that way. Although these days I'm a little less attached to that feeling, and when I listen to it, I can go, oh, that's pretty cool, It's okay.
Yeah, so he used three extra guys on stage to recreate the album, because obviously all
the
instruments were analog, and they didn't have any samples.
I have a DVD of him doing that.
Cool. And it just made me think and wonder how you're able to recreate all the sounds and all the effects from the album live on stage. I mean, do you often have to compromise on the sounds, or are you able to recreate everything? It's obviously a huge task to program everything before the tour.
Well, for a Dream Theater album, you know, it's a little different. Yeah, it's definitely hard to do, and there's a lot of keyboards involved. It's I mean, if I would go and try to do like what I did on The Road Home, one of my solo albums, I would need to hire like some other people, keyboardists, to make it happen if I were to go out and do that live. But for the Dream Theater album, you know, there's some parts that, yeah, it's like more than I can do with two hands, really, or maybe I used a particular, like I might have used my Moog Voyager, or I might have used some software to make a sound or whatever. So there's definitely a lot of pre-production and trying to figure out, you know, well, first thing I do is, okay, I did certain things when I recorded, but what is the end product? What does the listener really hear? Because, you know, when I'm layering lots of keyboards and there's a big, big, thick power, you know, guitar chord or whatever, then sometimes a lot of the things I do get kind of, dare I say, lost in the mix, yeah. which is sad, but it's just, you know, it's just reality. You can't have everything. You know, that you, I can't have every part that I play always there. It's just not going to happen. So that's fine. But anyway, so my process is to listen to what, you know, is the final mix and what can be heard and what's important to represent live. So a lot of times what I'll do is, if I used an instrument that's other than what I bring out with me live, because I try to kind of like keep my live system a little bit smaller than the studio system, or a lot smaller, really, I'll go and I'll do, like I just did a whole session of sampling where I went in and I said, you know what, I need this kind of sound, like from the computer, some software, and I need this from this other Moog, and I need something from my Novation keyboard, and I'll just literally sample the sounds, and I'll you know, into my Oasis. Yeah. So I'll play every, like, you know, I'll record every fourth or something like that of the sound, and then make it a nice layout, and then it'll be like on my Oasis. Cool. Like I have a bunch of things that I just already did that. I already did a lot of that work. Even things that are orchestral things, or some really cool pads that I did with some help from some of my computer stuff, some things that I recorded with this cool program called Evolve, and Atmosphere combined, and you know, and I even went in and I recorded this solo orchestral things, like violin parts and cello that I used some really cool libraries for in the studio, but then, you know, to do it live, I just sampled a lot of it. So
have you started to think about your stage setup already, or is that a bit too early?
Yeah, I have. I've been thinking about it a lot. I've been working on it. It's going to be less. It's going to be less busy looking.
Okay.
I'm not going to do. I'm not like before. I had this whole. It looked like I was piloting some airplane or something like that with the Memotron and the Radius all around the Oasis. And it's a little hard to push around, like when I would do my spinning thing. Yeah. So I'm not gonna have those other pieces on the keyboard this time. I'm gonna do it a different way.
Will you be trading your Zenriffer for your iPhone or something?
No, I'm still gonna use the Zenriffer on some things because it's so much fun.
That's cool.
But I'll use the iPhone maybe a little bit for a couple of parts. And there's some other surprises. I won't give away the ship right now.
So. Well, the tour starts June 3rd, and it kicks off in Sweden at the Sweden Rock Festival. And then you're visiting several places in Europe in June, and then you continue to do North America in July and August, and then Europe again in fall. Do you get to visit any new countries this time? I see Moscow is listed in June. Have you played there before, or is this the first?
We've never played in Moscow. It'll be the first time for the band to be there. I think James was there to do some. He was in Russia to do some project.
That's right. A
couple years ago, right? But no, it'll be the first time. It'll be so interesting to go check it out. Cool. And then we're also going to go to Israel, which has been something that's been a long time coming. A lot of excited fans, and you know about that. So it's going to be fun. It's always fun to go to a new place.
Yeah, that's cool. I see you're playing in Tel Aviv June 16th, and with special guests Efrat, and I see you got loads of different bands as supporting acts or as special guests, anything from Neil Morris to Frost, Efrat, and then a few festivals as well.
Where's Neil doing it? I don't even know.
Neil is going to be special guests in Gelsenkirchen in Germany at June,
Oh, fantastic.
June 24th.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Okay.
Cool. There's loads of different bands. Is it basically Mike that sets up
Yeah, what's really funny, I was looking, we were at the video shoot and I was, we had just gotten an announcement. Mike just sent us the announcement about the Progressive Nation in Europe.
That's right, yeah.
So, and I was looking and I was, one of the bands I think is called Unexpect, is that right?
That's right,
Yeah.
the opening act.
So I started, so I was, I looked at that and I hadn't heard of them before. So I started to listen to a little bit of it and I thought, oh my God, this is wild and crazy. This is some cool stuff. So then John Petrucci came in the room. I said, John, have you ever heard, do you know about this band Unexpect? He's like, no, what about, who are they? Like, what is it? So, so really it's a Mike. Mike has taken that. He loves doing that. That's his, that's the producer in him,
That's cool.
just doing what he does best.
I see you're also gonna have for the European part Los Angeles band Big Elf and Opeth from Sweden again as well.
Right, that might, yeah. So
Do
it's
you
my
hear
chance. Wow.
do you listen a lot to that kind of music? Is it or is it mainly when touring that you'd be listening more to their music?
Oh, I heard a song of Big Elf. I hadn't known about them either until I just saw that they were going to be joining us. I can't remember right now what it was. It was slightly progressive, a little bit more pop, but slightly also a little bit heavy, right? Is that kind of the vibe? Yeah, I mean, what do I listen to? I don't listen to this kind of stuff. I listen to electronic music. I
That's
listen
right,
to
yeah.
other things, but I'm a big, there's certain things I listen to. I love, like Porcupine Tree and Steven Wilson's solo albums. Of course, I got to play on the last one, which was such an honor to do that.
That's
And
cool.
I don't know. I have
And I see you
other
got some
kinds.
other really cool bands lined up as well for the American leg, Zappa Play Zappa, Pain of Salvation, and Beardfish. So
Yeah, that'll be fun. It'll be really fun.
the fans are really in for some extra treats, both in America and in Europe as well.
Right. That's going to be great. I just think that this, it seems like these Progressive Nation experiences will be so much more balanced musically. Like we have, as it should be. I think again, we learn from what we've done in the past, and Mike and our manager work really. I mean, our agents work really hard on trying to put together the right lineup. Of course, there's bands that sometimes we want that it doesn't work out. But in this case, what did work out, I think, especially, well, I'm more aware of the American the bands that are coming with us for the American leg. But I just think it's going to be a great combination of bands.
That's cool. Well, we're really hoping that you'll make it back to Norway as well in September or October during the European leg.
I have one thing that I want to be able to make sure to tell you because it's news that's coming up really soon. And you'll want to know about it as well,
Cool.
which is that I'm just finishing, I just mastered a new solo album.
Ah, cool. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's going to be called Notes on a Dream.
Ah.
And as soon as I have as soon as the front cover graphic is done, I'll post it around on my forums and stuff. And but it's an album of solo piano music, and it's primarily my own arrangements of Dream Theater songs.
Oh, cool. That's really
So,
interesting. Is that something that you've been involved with during recording the new album, or is it in between
yes,
projects?
it's something that I've been thinking about for a while, and finally got to make happen in this little in some of the break time here. It's actually an idea that my wife had a while ago, so it's something that I just finally had the time to make happen, and I said, okay, I'm gonna do it. So made it happen, and it's done. And now I'm just working on some artwork, and as soon as it's cooked up, I'll get it out there.
Oh, cool. That's really good news, and we'll be excited to hear your hear the arrangements. And I understand it was like your arrangements and interpretations of Dream Theater songs, was that it?
Right, exactly. It's my own arrangements of Dream Theater songs.
Oh, cool.
It's mostly like ballady, the ballady kind of songs, but there's also a lot of progressive piano playing in there as well, because a lot of times I extended the songs and added little parts, and there's also three originals on there as well.
Huh. Cool. That's really good news.
Cool.
To wrap it up, thank you so much for taking your time, Jordan, to do this interview. We're hoping that Dream Theater will be back in Norway this fall in, September or October. If you come back, and hopefully you will, this will be your 10th visit to Norway, Dream Theater's 10th visit. It's also the 10th Dream Theater album.
Wow.
And it's also the 10-year anniversary for the Norwegian Dream Theater fan club.
So, a lot of tens going on here.
It's a lot of tens going on, so hopefully this will be a special night for the fan club members. We'll be setting up something special for them that night before the gig. So hopefully in not too long the tour dates will be fixed. And
Yeah, for sure. We'll have to have a major celebration there. Yeah. We'll be right back.